Welcome to the Midnight Writers Podcast, helping authors become better writers.
Episode 8, Interview with Kevin Eikenberry. This is John.
This is Lena.
And I'm Ben.
And we have with us today for the final episode, Kevin Eikenberry. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. Hope to do it again sometime.
Yeah, we'll have you anytime.
Awesome.
When did you get started writing?
Okay, so truth in lending, I was a English minor in college, and I decided that I wasn't going to do anything with that, even though in college I had somebody tell me that I was a really good writer, one of my professors. And then, so fast forward about, 8 or 9 years, and I was working at Space Camp. And one of the things that I was the manager of the Space Camp program for a while, but before I took over that job, I was with the Aviation Challenge portion, and we had a group of counselors. We created a fictional fighter squadron and wrote up little bios for all of the fictional pilots, and then a couple of us actually wrote little short stories for our kids to read to kind of get an idea of the overall scenario we were trying to teach them. And then, so that was fun. I did a little bit with that. Probably, I think I wrote 6 or 7 stories with that, and never intended to do anything other than share them with our little group and have fun with it. I've been Army Reservist for the last 23 years, and like 4 more weeks I retire. But so I was mobilized in 2003 to Fort Bliss, and I had a lot of time on my hands. So I actually took some of those stories and combined them into a novel. And again, to share with the group, it's going to be in the file can forever. I will never get it out. Try to do anything with it because it's terrible. I recently went back and reread some of it and was just laughing. This is really bad. So I put that away, and I thought that was the end of the writing thing, you know, because it was a story I wanted to tell with that little group of characters, and it was fun. And so I was teaching ROTC at a college in Indiana, and starting in 2008, and about a year into the job, I had a character start talking to me. And it was interesting because I would write notes and little things with world building and different ideas that would come along. And I started realizing after about 2 weeks of this that I had filled up about 15 pages on a notebook. Wow. And I probably had a book in my head, and I had no idea what to do with it. I figured I needed to go back and kind of rehone my skills because of how bad everything I thought was. And so I took a creative writing class on the campus. And I turned in the first assignment. It came back with 2 words on it. See me. And, you know, that's either really good or really bad. And the professor looked at me point blank and said, "Why aren't you published?" And I said, "I have no idea." So my coursework then the rest of that semester, I wrote 3 short stories and had to submit them to like 3 different markets apiece. So I did that. And that kind of got me started on writing short fiction. One of those short stories sold in 2011. Ship Mines and Ice Cream was my first short story sale. And at that time, I was writing short fiction, but I still had this book in my mind. And so I started writing it without a plan. I kind of wrote everything off the seat of my pants back then. And it took me 18 months to write, and that's runs in the family. So
did you write that with Sleeper Protocol at the same time?
No. Runs in the Family was the first book I ever wrote. I actually self-published it for a little while and had a lot of problems with files, corruption, and everything with Amazon. And so I ended up taking it down, and I just sat on it for a while. And so I decided I was going to focus on another project, and I started writing Sleeper Protocol and wrote that book. And after it was picked up, the publisher that published Runs in the Family, Strigidai, here in Colorado Springs, they said, "Hey, we'd like to take a look at Runs and maybe publish it as our first science fiction book." And I said, "Well, all right, fine. I'll let you take a look at it." And they took a look at it, and they decided that they wanted to buy it. So I had 2 books come out in January, which was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it sets a track record that I don't know I'll be able to keep for the rest of my life. But
set that bar way too high.
Yeah, it's a pretty high bar at this point. But yeah, I just started writing and kind of decided to get into it with both feet, per se, and just write.
Awesome.
So Runs in the Family is sci-fi. Is Sleeper Protocol also sci-fi?
They're both science fiction. Runs in the Family is military science fiction.
Okay, that would explain the tank on the front. Yeah,
tanks, future aircraft, lots of battles and stuff like that. Sleeper Protocol is more, it's science fiction, but I've had several people call it a psychological thriller. I've had a lot of folks say it's got a kind of a golden age kind of science fiction story. You know, it has a kind of a happy for now ending with the character. So yeah, I write science fiction, But they're two very divergent books. What's interesting is that both of them take place in the same shared universe in my head, but they're on two different timelines and they will never meet.
Interesting.
Yeah. Cool. It wasn't intended that way, but when I started writing Sleeper Protocol, it made more and more sense to weave it into the world.
Yeah.
And so I went back and wove the two together, but then spent like a 3-day period on a retreat writing on this big whiteboard of how I wanted to do this differently and took pictures. And so I had the whole timeline diverged, and it's hanging on the wall in my office so that I can consult it if I need to.
Cool.
Nice. Don't get confused.
Was part of the reason for that because you'd already kind of built the one world that it was easy to kind of put another story into that universe?
Yeah. As I built the world and Runs in the Family, I realized this is a huge story.
Mm-hmm.
And as I looked at the different ways that the universe could work and how the decisions that are made in that book could affect books later on, there was easily another book in there. There could be even probably another trilogy different than the two books that are there.
Mm-hmm.
I've written several short stories that are tied into the world as well. So it's one big universe that there's a lot of room to play in.
Mm-hmm. Neat.
So this was through like a small press?
Or? Yes. Yeah. Both of them are published through small press. Red Adept Publishing is a publisher for Sleeper Protocol. That was, I think I told a story in one of the last episodes about I turned down a bad contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I turned down that contract, of course, the first thing you do is you second guess yourself. Oh, I, should have signed that contract. It'd be a published book, and then, reached out to some friends of mine and said, I want to still do a small press with this particular book. And I wanted to find a really reputable one. So I asked a couple of friends, and Red Adept was mentioned a couple of times. And so I submitted to them. And let's see, it was what, July or August of 2014.
Hmm.
And, called in October one day and said, hey, we'd like to publish your book. And I was floored.
Very nice day. Huh?
It was a very nice day. It was a very nice day indeed. Yeah, I was floored. But it was a great process to bring the book to life through the editing. I had a fantastic editor in Alyssa Hall. And then my line editor was Sarah Carlton. And they were just fantastic. Both of them made the book so much better.
Did you have any input on anything involving the cover? Like, is the name yours? Like Sleeper Protocol? Because I know in some of the big publishers... They choose for you.
Here's your story.
Here's your story. Okay, so when I turned the book in, it was the original title was Walkabout. And as soon as the first conversation I had with the publisher on the phone, she said, nope, got to go. Title's got to go. There's too many books with that in the title that could be construed. I said, okay. So we went through the entire editing process, 6 content edit passes, 5 line edit passes. And about the time we were doing the last couple passes for line editing, the publisher was like, okay, we need to start thinking about a title.
Mm.
And it cramped my brain. For 3 weeks, I had a big, one of those easel sticky pads that was taped to a desk up in our loft in our house. And I would write words. And I went back, I read the manuscript again, and I would go in and write keywords.
Mm.
And I try to find ways to match them together without using walkabout, but having just kind of the same feel to it. And I beat myself up for 3 weeks. And so finally, I took what I had scribbled down on that piece of paper, and I wrote 10 titles. And Sleeper Protocol was one of mine, but what's more interesting is that it was one that the publisher had come up with as well.
Really? Oh, wow. That's cool.
And it was like, synchronicity, that's the title.
That's it.
We go forward. On the cover, Red Adept gave me a questionnaire and said, what are things that you'd like to see in the cover? And provide a couple of examples that are out there that you think might be something similar. And so I went through, I don't know, probably 150, 200 Amazon, pages, just looking at thumbnails of cover pages, and came up with 3 or 4 that I liked that had the same kind of feel, and put that together and sent the questionnaire in. And I got the first cover proof the night before my birthday last year. And it was funny. It was a sad but very honorable occasion. My grandfather-in-law passed away as a World War II veteran, and I had the opportunity to be the presiding officer at his funeral, which was tremendous. But that was the next day on my birthday as well. So this comes in the night before my birthday, and the publisher calls me and says, hey, are you near a computer? And I said, no, I can be. And so I ran, got the MacBook, flipped it open, and she said, okay, I just sent you an email. And I floored.
Mm-hmm.
Floored. I was so excited. They just nailed it.
Wow.
And it was really awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah, the cover on Runs in the Family, I had a lot of input on that one as well, which was good. And we were a lot of great artists that we had go through that process to come up with the cover. So I'm very, very happy with both of them. But yeah, you don't normally get the opportunities to have that kind of influence.
And did you get the name for Runs in the Family? Is that yours?
Yep.
You got to keep it? Nice.
Yeah, that was the original name, and they liked it. They're going to keep it.
Cool.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I remembered when you announced your walkabout changing the Sleeper Protocol and how excited you were. And I remember you saying that the publisher and you had the same idea, like right at the same time. So
yeah,
that's
the last email that they sent, it was just synchronicity. It was mm-hmm. it was I think number 3 or number 4 on both of our lists, and it was like, that's it. It was the only one that matched.
Mm-hmm.
When I was reading the book, that stuck out in my mind, that it was originally titled Walkabout, and I could see that easily as how mm-hmm. that was a good title. And then like, we're just Sleeper Protocol, and it's like, oh, that's a cool name.
Yeah,
so
it works out really well. And you know, it was kind of funny because I wrote the sequel for it during NaNoWriMo last year.
Nice.
And
so is that coming out soon?
It's been through my initial beta reader, and so now I have to go through and polish and put things back together. Then it will go to my beta team, and we'll get it ready to go, and hopefully get it turned into the publisher by the summer, and see what happens with it. But having Sleeper Protocol as a name made the naming the second one a lot easier. So the second one is Vendetta Protocol.
Nice. So will this be a trilogy, or is this just going to be the two?
No, this is, you know, it's kind of funny because that book was originally intended to be just a one-off.
Right.
And it was funny because as I went through the editing process, my editor, Alyssa, she sends me an email and says, what if, I don't want to spoil it, but what if, you already know, John, so what if Mally's still alive? And it was like, oh. Oh, and immediately it was, you know, I started writing notes. What would that look like? And what would this artificial intelligence program do if she had been able to actually get out of his head? And what would that look like in the next book or two or three? So honestly, I don't know if it's going to be a trilogy or 4 or 5. Who knows?
Interesting.
I do know a lot of things, though, that will change as the series goes on, which is a lot of fun. To have that kind of foresight now that I didn't originally have.
Right.
Runs in the Family, it's a trilogy.
Okay.
It'll be a trilogy.
Cool.
Any other ideas you have in the coffers coming down the pipes at some point?
I think we talked about alternate history I want to try to write. Mm-hmm. That would be probably a one-off, maybe a 2 or 3 book thing. We'll see if it would be received.
Mm-hmm.
Quite honestly, that's pretty much where I'm at right now as far as the long-term ideas, because between those universes and Runs in the Family and Sleeper Protocol and that big universe, if I played those timelines out, I probably have 12 to 15 books.
Okay.
And it's, you know, now I just have to have the time to write them.
Yeah, right.
So what does your family think of your writing?
You know, it's been kind of fun because... you know, my immediate family, my wife and my kids are young, 8 and 3, and they're supportive. It's been interesting to develop it from something that was, okay, it's a little bit of a hobby, and now it's, hey, I've sold some short stories, to all of a sudden this is a very serious kind of thing. And it's been great to have their encouragement. You know, my sister was an English teacher for a long time, so I think she's kind of jealous sometimes. but I also know that she wants to write children's books and is now actively working to do that since she's left her teaching job behind. So I look for her to be able to do something as well. She and I had some fantastic English teachers in high school that, you know, to this day have an effect on how we write. So the family reactions have been good.
That's cool. Do you think this will be a full-time job for you ever?
I would love for it to be. You know, it's something that I can easily, you know, when I actually wrote the first draft for Sleeper Protocol, I had foot surgery. So I was on my butt for 4 weeks. I literally, you know, was on crutches. I had a metal rod sticking out of my foot. So I had nothing to do. And I was able to average between 5,000 and 6,000 words a day.
Wow.
On that book. So I ended up writing, I wrote the first draft of that book in 7 weeks. Compared to when I wrote Runs in the Family the first time, it took me 18 months to write that book. So, yeah, I can hit a groove and I can write pretty fast now if I get the opportunity.
Do you think NaNoWriMo has helped you to learn how to write faster?
Yeah. Yeah, that and advice I had from Kevin J. Anderson, which was write bad at first. You can always go back and fix it later.
Yeah.
Just get it out of your head. And it's very easy now to just sit down and not worry about the mistakes, not worry about, you know, does the gun on the shelf end up in the, just write, just get it out of your head, because yeah, you go back and you pay attention during your rewrite process, and that's where you can catch all those things. And again, with a good editor, you make the book so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And so having more sets of eyes to look at the book rather than, you know, you produce it as fast as you can and get one of your friends to look at it and edit it, then you post it on, you know, a self-publishing site, take the time and really go through it, because it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So what about your writing process? Like when do you write? Are you, sounds like you're still in the working for the Army.
Yeah.
So like when do you find time?
I write after the kids go to bed. So when I'm actively involved in a project, my goal is 2000 words a night, after the kids go to bed. So kids are in bed between 8 and 8:30. My wife will usually go to bed well before me, and there's nights that I can crank out 2000 words fairly easily and be in bed, you know, by 10 o'clock, 10:30. And there's other nights that it's 11:30 and I'm still sitting there, but I always try to hit the goal. Mm. Yeah.
Every night?
Probably 6 nights out of 7. I will normally take one night off just to kind of give myself a break.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, there's also times when I've just kept writing, and mm-hmm. I can count a lot of times when I've gone on to 3,000, 3,500 a night, just because, uh-huh. you know, I think Stephen King called it in Misery, the hole in the paper. You fall through the hole in the paper and you just go.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it's very easy to do.
Hmm.
Do you have to do any mental prep or?
Yeah. You know, I used to write everything off the seat of my pants, and I don't anymore. I plan a lot mm-hmm. for my novels. Mm-hmm. And so I spend a lot of time outlining, the outline for Vendetta Protocol, the sequel to Sleeper, is 31 pages long, because it's not only the outline with the scenes, but it's also key things that I want to get into, you know, descriptions, what's going on around the particular scene,
mm-hmm.
things that I want to capture in that process. And it makes it a lot easier for me to come back in and write it later. The more detail I've gone into in the beginning, then I sit down normally, I look at my outline. I write in Scrivener, so on the right-hand side of the screen, mm-hmm. you've got the inspector portion. So I usually put a snippet of what the scene is supposed to be and then any key data that's down on the right side. So as I'm going through, I can kind of see and just go.
So as you're writing, is there stuff that you're like, I meant to include this, but it just, the way the plot went just kind of went around it.
Yeah, I throw out outlines all the time. You know, in the Army, we have this saying that a plan never survives contact with the enemy. Your outline never survives your characters, because your characters will do something at some point where you'll be writing, what in the world?
Yep.
And you have to stop and
yep.
kind of reevaluate. And normally when that happens, I've learned to, rather than hit the backspace button as fast as I can,
mm-hmm.
look at my outline again real quick and see, can I live with this?
Mm-hmm.
And if I live with this, what are the changes that's going to affect the rest of this chapter, but the rest of the book, and or could be the rest of the timeline? And most of the time, it's really easy to say, yep, I'm in. And I can go with it. And then if it's not, then I'll, you know, hit the delete button. But most of the time I'll capture that idea for something later that yeah. I could do something again. But yeah, your characters are going to change your outline, and you've got to be prepared for it, because otherwise you're just going to be stuck.
So how has your outlining process changed over the course of 3 books now and your short stories you've done beforehand?
Sure. That's a great question. So I wrote Runs in the Family with no structure at all. It was just, I was going to write a novel. I know how to write novels because I'd read novels for all my life. And this surely should be pretty easy. And so when I wrote it, you know, I thought I had a pretty good beginning point, thought I had a pretty good midpoint, pretty good end point. I thought, you know, I can get the 3-act structure, no problem. When it went through the editing process, the first 4 original chapters are now gone. So it's completely started in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. There were a couple other chapters later on that were morphed and, you know, changed and combined. And so I learned a lot from the writing of that book. When I wrote Sleeper Protocol, I had the opportunity to meet Lou Anders. We talked about that in one of the earlier episodes, and talking about Hollywood formula. And Hollywood formula basically taking the 7-point story structure, and instead mm-hmm. of working with pacing, it works more on emotions from the characters mm-hmm. and the emotional connection of the reader. And so when I wrote Sleeper, I ran it through Hollywood formula. And there's a program that you can get for Mac and for Windows now called Contour by Mariner Software. And it is a screenwriting tool. and it goes through and it asks you questions and helps you plot out the beats and whatever as you go through, and it builds an outline for you at the end, and then you print that off and that's your outline. And so, you know, like I talked about, I wrote that book in 7 weeks. I knew at the end of the book that it had a strong emotional hit. Mm-hmm. You know, the Hollywood formula, there's three tenets of it that have to happen at the end of the book, and the closer they happen to the end and to each other, the more powerful the emotional resonance is. Yeah. The protagonist gets what they want, they defeat the antagonist, and they reconcile with the stakes character. If you can have those three things as close together as possible at the end, you will hit the audience in the feels every time. And I did. I felt like when I wrote the book, I felt like I did. I told a funny story not that long ago that when my wife and I went and saw Interstellar. Interstellar has its flaws, but it's a very powerful emotional story at the end. And, you know, we came out of the theater and I'm bawling.
Just once, I was like five times. Yeah,
I mean, tears are rolling down my face, and I'm bawling. And my wife's like, "What's wrong?" She said, "I like the movie. I didn't get that feel." I'm like, "No." And she looks at me. I said, "I know that Sleeper Protocol is a good book because of that emotional resonance. It was so powerful watching that film that I thought, man, I really did it." Mm-hmm. And it was great. You know, last week I had the book was reviewed by Publishers Weekly, which was nice. Really crazy and surreal. But one of the key things that they said was it was an emotionally powerful debut. And that's exactly what I wanted it to be.
Very nice.
Pays to do your homework.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I got some work to do.
Congratulations on all that.
Thank you. It's, like I said before, it has been surreal for the last month or so. I have a pretty good idea where the sales for Sleeper are because it keeps going along and, you know, it goes through the ups and downs of the rating process. I won't actually see the numbers for a while, but... Runs in the Family is going crazy is the only way I can say it. It will, it's on track to sell 500 copies this month.
Wow.
Which is amazing.
Very nice.
It's very amazing. So I don't know what to do. I mean,
Write more.
Yeah. And that's kind of been, you know, I'm in the process of retiring from the Army. So I've had a lot of running around errands kind of things to do. And I'm hopeful to get back to really serious writing in the next week or two, try to bang out the rest of that alternate history and move on and get the sequel ready for Sleeper Protocol. And I got to plot Runs in the Family out a little bit more. The original trilogy plan that I had, I decided to throw out the window. I didn't want to be the author that brought back a dead character. So
yeah,
unless you go back in time and, you know, reintroduce.
It's just not so good.
Yeah, and you know, and it would be real easy to do with the science that we talk about in the two books. It would be real easy, but I decided that the main character in Runs in the Family doesn't need that to happen. There's other things that she needs to go and do.
So would the sequel be all in the family then?
No. You know, actually, I had played around with, you know, titles with family and whatever else. I don't know that it will. We'll see. I had played with, like, Family Matters, Family Affair, that sort of thing. But, you know, when we're talking about it Runs in the Family, it deals with genetically passing down memory. So being able to take memory from someone from our time and basically imprint it into someone's brain 300 years in the future. That was kind of the idea. And so having that the tie to the genetic piece maybe Runs in the Family, yeah, that kind of works together. But now I'm not sure what I want to name the next book. Yeah. And like I said, I'm going to throw out about half of that planned sequel and re-outline it because I decided I want to do some different things.
Well, I think Die Hard's already taken. So
yeah, Die Harder, die Hardest, softer. Something like that. So. Yeah, we'll see what happens with it, though. It's exciting to be at that place where I can really kind of retool and figure out what I want to do versus, you know, because those ideas for that particular trilogy are probably 5 years old, and I've grown a lot as a writer in that time. And so, yeah, there's some of the stuff I wrote in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years where I go back and look at the very beginning, like trope, and you throw those out. But yeah, sometimes you have to kind of keep going, you know. I was afraid of tropism with Sleeper Protocol because one of the worst tropes you always hear is don't have a character with amnesia. My character starts off the book, he wakes up in Australia with no memory.
Purpose of the whole book.
Yeah,
and it's him recovering his memory over time. And so what we did through the editing process was cut out about four pages at the beginning of the book and really pull up where he starts having his first memories, so that he wakes up, there's that moment of where am I kind of, and then the first memory hits. And then you're able to build from there as the rest of the book goes on. So he's not amnesiac for long. And you know, he starts off in a wheelchair, and I wanted to get him out of the wheelchair as soon as I could too, because, you know, talking about his recovery process physically would be very difficult, but I didn't want to get into that. I wanted to have him get up and ready to go and show off what the technology had been, so that he would be capable of, you know, waking up 40 days after they had, you know, gotten his body to where it needed to be, and he'd be able to get up and walk and do those types of things, but do it well. But
and if he spends all that time in the beginning in a wheelchair, it's hard to say, okay, now go walk across America.
Yeah, and you got to get him out, you know, and you know, starting him and getting him, and somebody made the comment of one of the initial drafts, you're getting him out of the hospital at like 2 days. Yep.
Welcome to the future.
Yep. He's out. He's out. He's moving. He's doing the things that he needs to do, and he's getting the experiences that are going to help him recover his memory. And, you know, could I have him sit in a hospital for, you know, 8 or 10 days? Yeah, I can tell you, I've been in a hospital for 8 or 10 days, and you get bored pretty quick. And so why would I want to talk about the boring parts? Yeah, the story is getting him out into the world and letting him explore. And then you can kind of play with how the future has changed and still remain the same in a lot of ways, which is fun.
Yeah, he's the Australian Jason Bourne. He doesn't need no hospitals. Come on. Just gets up and goes. He's done. He's ready.
That's cool. Well, last question is, what piece of advice would you give to new authors that are striving for getting what you've gotten so far?
Write. Most of the time you hear people that say, oh, I could write a book if I just had the time.
Everybody's got the time.
Everybody has the time. It's your discipline to put your butt in the chair and write. And the more you write, the more things will happen to you, the more you'll learn, the more you'll improve, and the more successful I think you will ultimately be. It's all about your self-discipline to sit down and do it. And that can be difficult, because we all know as writers, you get that time when you feel like your work is flat or it's just crap. And you just feel like I can't do this anymore. And people call it writer's block, and there's no blockage. Your words are there. It's just you having to work through them and figure out, okay, this project isn't working. Go write something different. And I have a friend that will get blocked, and she doesn't normally write this, but she will go write really steamy erotica just to jumpstart her brain. And then come back to whatever she was writing and be able to start writing again, because sometimes you just have to start your brain on something different. And even if it's, you know, sitting down when you first sit down at a computer and, oh, I don't know what I'm going to write, pull up a little document and write about the sunset you saw on the way home or something, because every little thing that you can do will help jumpstart your brain and get you into that mode. And then just sit down and write.
Or maybe just jump between projects.
There are a lot of people that do that. You know, I can't keep them all straight if I did that. It's very difficult. So I have to kind of hyper-focus on a project to get into it. But then again, yeah, there's been times when I've been stuck on something. So I've stopped, rebooted on a short story, or done something totally different for a while, and then been able to come back to the book and finish it pretty easily.
Well, thank you.
No worries.
It's been awesome having you, and we look forward to the next time we can have you on.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I enjoyed it too.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
No worries.
Yep. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Writers Podcast. If you've enjoyed this content, sign up for our newsletter on our website, midnightwriterssociety.com, where you'll get a lot more great information. See you next Wednesday.